Please welcome to the upper stage, Jacob MacArthur Mooney.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Pamela and Jeffrey, for sharing the night tonight. It was great hearing you and everyone else who's going to do the open mic later. An introduction to the geographer's love song of his life. You and I were born on an impossible island. Local folklore purported that when seen by the gods, the island drew a perfect circle in the sea. Trained skeptics set out to disprove this superstition. First they counted paces, then somebody invented a device that could properly validate their findings. Someone elsewhere was launched into space. Evidence came down from international committees suggesting that the island was not quite a circle. There were irregular masses stretching out into the ocean. This forever sabotaged the national psychology. Revisions were brokered for the national flag. Parliament discussed renaming the island from Reglatug, which in our language meant circle, to Reatticus, which in our language meant here. A revolution spread westward and defeated these ideas. Men were killed for using the new name in a song. The PhDs who preceded me were made to use protractors washed over by a soldier who covered his face. But you and I were born in the decades of forgetting. The priestess told us at our weddings that our grandfathers were generals and had fought on opposite sides of the war. After their campaigns, order was restored to our capital city. We took our firstborn daughter there so she could see the graveyards. We buried our legs in the sand. The summer I found work at the National Academy, they uncovered latent metals in the silt of our lake beds. All this and proper planning brought the island new prosperity. Refugees from other islands aimed their boats at our beaches while we took that little house on the shoreline I had promised. You saw it in the background of a bicycle commercial. We made love for the first time in 16 years while outside. The sounds you made in coupling were lost inside the waves. We both voted for the man who promised us modernity, attended speeches that were heard on every island in the chain. The year I got ill at the family reunion, he set about the task of rendering the circle. Phil from poorer islands was lifted in by planes. Crowds gathered at the pier to watch the workmen smooth the edges, brought roses for their wives and fresh breakfast every shift. Our largest corporations paid the ancillary costs. Old colleagues from my college days engineered the dig. The young man we voted for was voted in again. In the fifth year of the digging, I lost my sense of sight. I sat in my deck chair and listened to the workers. Our cities were congested by counter demonstrations. Certain elements complained that the work was too expensive, that some of our bird life would be lost to the project. The year we bought the walker, they finished with a circle, shot a man into space to bring back photographic proof. The book of his life story has been adapted into film. You keep it in the living room and read to me at bedtime. The shoreline has since been moved far away. In the lonely afternoons, I sing towards the waves. Oh, my voice, my people voice, come find me. Hi. That was sort of the prologue of this new book, which isn't even out yet. Comes out next week. But I have pirated copies that I stole from the guts of Random House over there, if you want to partake. It's in two halves. There's the first half is about a plane crash in Nova Scotia in 1998, outside my bedroom window, and the other half is about an airport, specifically Pearson Airport. I was living for 2 or 3 years in Malton, which is sort of the part of the GTA that provides the service industry for Pearson Airport, and is one of the more culturally interesting parts of the city, I think. So I'm basically going back and forth, some readings I do from part one, some readings I do from part two. You've all come on a part two night. So these are offset in and around Malton. I'm going to plow through six of them, and I might stick in another poem that's not in the book if I feel that either you or I are bored. Most of these are named after intersections in Malton. Airport and dairy. The plane parades over the park, then the college, and a nice shadow on flatware off the gray sheath around my Mississauga map. There be dragons. Trail guides, I'm learning to tell time by the night sky. Northeastern headed south, 9:30, YYZ, JFK, GVA, have fun. The terminal building abandons her brood, but I can't help waving. I will be their scale key, they'll be my carrier pigeons. Twin engine flares light the neighborhood's west boundary. Seattle, Montreal, Boston, send more bookstores. The saddest parts of cities seem to settle around their airports, echolocation and pattern recognition. In the 50s, they expanded this peripheral strip and changed its name. You can see it now from space. I hear the din wriggle in through thin night air, hum and burr, the takeoff and the shake it makes. Radar sings a view of my new neighbors in the darkness, channeling vibrations through the rental. Bleary-eyed emigres get pushed against the brick, feel it's got rhythm. This means we're living everywhere, hum and burr, also hub and home, also hiding and hopeful and here. Center and perimeter. A small boy with a cello, two Sikhs on red bicycles, another, 40-40 grits and Tories in F small town for years. Our masala hot sun melts the Toronto template, shift boundaries and blinds the windows of my nation house. Welcome to the festival of dignified reserve. Civil service code words spark out from circled holes. Hunter Orange is easy for the night shift to see. Sewer lane, rain drainage, 3 meters to drop. The road team overtime's on. Whatever they're mining must be rooted in deep 6-foot piles of dirt on the sidewalk. Unearthing is framed as a form of retrieval, but it's Malton's only act of creation. What results, the unearth gets pounded into pavement, or we build our houses from it, whole streets from other people's hand-me-down histories. This asphalt is trilingual. Walk it, feel its lumps in your spine. Everything is everyone else. The first wave of Malton housing units fail. It begins with believing your warped and weakened houses want the best for you despite their bad intestines. Their guttural melodies burping through the night, problem plumbing, poor cement. Houses erected to lend credence to the headlines, harnessed to the land, the development story, the immigration angle. Assemble your complaints from the I's gone undotted, the T's left to find a line to lean themselves against. A door curves towards its frame but never closes. A faucet winces and intones to you its whistle, saying, nothing is all right behind these walls. The sedentary functions of slope foundations fester deep into the inventory left to us by landscape. What is it they say about the damage done by water? It's terminal. Once it worms inside of you, it turns to take you down, an invader from the slow, unplanning earth. Darcel and Morningstar, home of the public library in Malton, Ontario. At lunch, the Lincoln kids stake positions in the library. Boys dressed as US Army snipers stage empty baggy deals to fluster public librarians. One block in all directions, convenience stores with unlicensed meat counters renew the pagan non-Western ways. The tongue, the kidney, in the heart of the animal, there's color, almost sound. In the square, the same pigeon's been run over 12 times. Every squeaky curve of him's rolled flat, except one leg arrowed upward by its break. D of E tracking bracelet beaming radio bleats to the bird gods. Inside, well-secured PCs perch on Gates Foundation stations. Men appear from doors disguised as walls. The ESL class is given 40 minutes. Most browse the stock of Disney distractions, mouth the names of authors on the new arrival shelf. I borrow old movies and $4 thrillers by the bagful, print poetry off the machines that sound like something chewing on bone, hood up, music on, growl the day out. Back against the metal detector doorman, I tease out the readable parts of bad papers. There's a war on, a race. Two kids in Toronto are sentenced as adults. Now we're allowed their eighth grade victim's name. His name is Rage Ghost. His name is Wait. By one, the sniper boys are gone. A sign advocating breast exams is missing. I'm gonna take a pause. I found a poem in this jacket that I didn't know was there. I'm gonna read it. It might be mine, I don't know. It's not even close to on topic. In 1965, a recently renamed Muhammad Ali, formerly Cassius Clay, fought Sonny Liston. It was supposed to be Boston, but they didn't get a license, so they had to move to Lewiston, Maine, which is a strange town. And they did it without TV cameras or anything in front of about 3,000 people, and it's generally considered one of the worst heavyweight title fights in the history of boxing. I give it a much more exciting, if violent, end in this poem. And this is sort of, I was reading a lot of alternate history, you know, this genre where it's like, well, if the Nazis had the alien technology of whatever, then this would have happened. It's that sort of thing. Anyway, it spins off based on that one difference. And the difference is in the title. Ali kills Liston, Lewiston, Maine, 1965. You no longer belong to Louisville or Lewis, you are Lewistons. By this well-spoken phantom hand, you have been commanded out of Kinshasa, your chains of feather boas torqued into sugarcane to be sold at border outlets to impatient local kids. It gets worse than this in shanty towns. In untested rural Georgia, a farmer fires off his rifle, his radio rope-a-dopes a moment, then explodes. 3,000 witnesses walk their cool perimeter, make untelevised appeals to the harvest gods of Maine. Nothing becomes of Nathan Hare. Nixon's list drains of enemies. Humphrey beats Nixon. Yarborough kills Allison. Mondale kills the rapist. It surprises us with snow for all of 88. Harding kills Kerrigan. McSorley kills Brashear. The cell they move you to is flooded, so you hang from their ceiling. Tyson kills Holyfield. You are approached by no biographers. America goes metric. Doctors arrive and find you burning fight cards. I'll find who wrote that poem and tell him that you liked it. The book is called Folk, and there's a handful of poems in it that are structured as songs. I'm not going to sing because you don't want that, but I will. If you're wondering why there's a chorus, that's why. This is called From Here You'll Have to Work Your Way Around It, which almost became the title of the book until I found out that that wasn't a very good title. Then what else would you rather have define you? Things intersect, they do. What lines would you draw in the scatter point? Things intersect, they do. For one afternoon in the week before Remembrance Day, the kids from Sowey Preschool brought charcoal to the graveyard, rubbed out impressions of Christian symbology, alien names like Le Marchand, Koliakovo, Hughes, things intersect, they do. The marking stones host leaf pile lean-tos, bright with held moisture like the morning, I slip spread eagle in my driveway. I have no name for this building I rent the western half of. I still can't find its edges, its innocent X and Y. So what else would you rather have define you? Things intersect, they do. What histories do sidewalks know? Things intersect, they do. Here be monuments. The bones they found while digging the subway, frozen holes that had once bedded street signs, prayer beads dropped in an S on the asphalt, the olive bread turns, the garbage around it. On the day I moved in, three dark hairs and the dew on my window that I mistook for cracks. Directories, parking lots, public bathrooms, lines, things intersect, they do, my there You're after my house, your home. I caught a mouse eating through the plaster between us. Neighbor, will you help me drive it out? All species need a niche in their ecosystems. Things intersect, they do. All geography requires is a faith in repetition, and for things to intersect, they do.
Fictional places. You talked about a fictional island, and then you talked about a real place in Ontario and made it sound fictional. But places, character, that seems to be something that you're connected to.
Yeah, you know, places is towns and communities and place in general are sort of my stock answer for the what do you write about question. I think that, you know, it's important to try and be multifaceted with it and try and do a large number of things with it. You know, I don't want to become someone who's associated with a very small, limited range of place. I want to become about place itself and not about a specific place in the way that, you know, some poets sometimes get stuck doing. So it's tricky. It helps to move every few years.
So is it about, how do I say, sort of the broad strokes? I mean, because like the island was about, you know, sort of was like about 100 stories rolled into one.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the point of that first poem, which is kind of like the prologue for the rest, is to sort of take what's in common between the two settings, which are the sort of rural Nova Scotia and then sort of exurban Toronto, and roll them, their concerns into one thing so that there's a common ancestor, I guess. And I mean, place is, once you let go of home, place is infinitely adaptable because you stop being owned by where you've set out from.
So one place could be any place.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to close with, like I said, the first half of the book is about a plane crash, and the research for that half involved just a wildly unhealthy amount of pouring over data and reports into the grisly details of crash of Swiss Air Flight 111 off the coast of Nova Scotia in September of 1998. And that was giving me a lot of nightmares. So as a advice for how to work through those nightmares, someone told me to keep a dream journal. And that journal, inspired by the first half of the book, became this poem in the second half of the book. Which is, again, most of the titles are intersections, some of them are real intersections, some of them are sort of abstracted intersections. This one's called Privacy and Sprawl. One. I just dreamt recovery, an ocean scene centered on a brightly painted boat. Not sure if I was any of the bodies recovered. It's been said in a dream, you are everything you see. Two. I just dreamt that mail was erotic, that reach was not something you command, but instead some magnetic hand-to-hand instinct, constant between bodies that have burnt the same hair, between skin that has sweat a shared warmth. Three, I just dreamt about an ocean. It refused to say its name. Four, I just dreamt about collapse, some incalculable weight in the bedroom suffocation. I just dreamt myself to death. I woke up belly down, gravity and fantasy, feeling out the argument, the air in my water glass breaking its bubble, and in doing so, surfacing, returning home unspoken for. Five. I just dreamt that an airplane had landed in the park across the street, that nobody recognized the people who stepped out of it, that the flag of their country was branded on their chests. Six. I just dreamt about design. I'm the kind of atheist who thinks he'll win the lotto. Seven. I just dreamt of a lightning strike shaped like a hand. It left me dry and exothermic in the night. The couple from the corner store found me in the morning, dragged me to their house, painted greens into my eyes where the impact shocked them white, found me a chair and taught me their language, sang me gently into morning, made me tell them all my names, made me dance. And eight. I just dreamt of veiled engine sounds, a cat purring, a rock slide, the rumble of an overloaded dryer. Wake up, we'll go outside and watch the red eye climb, yell goodbyes, cup hands at the perfect voices. These streets mean property. Their exits mean, I love you. It's been said in a dream, you see everything you've seen. Thanks.